Hello, I'm Dr. Monica Tinkopa, and welcome back to the Glow Up Era of MASH Management. This initiative is supported by an educational grant from Novo Nordisk Incorporated. This is the second of a four CMEO snacks in the series. Today's episode, we will be focusing on non-invasive tools for diagnosis and monitoring in MASLD. We have entitled this Ditch the Guesswork, Non-Invasive Tools That Slay Diagnosis and Monitoring. Again, I'm Monica Tinkopa. I'm an assistant professor in hepatology at the University of California, San Diego. I'm also an investigator in our MASLD Research Center. I'm pleased to be joined today by Dr. Emreen Danani, who I will ask to introduce herself. Welcome, Dr. Danani.
Thank you, Dr. Tinkopa. Really happy to be here. I'm Dr. Emreen Danani, and I'm an associate professor of medicine at Duke University. I take care of patients with chronic liver disease, but specifically, my clinical and research interest is in MASLD, and really happy to be here.
Fantastic. So I'm looking forward to our discussion today. Here is our learning objective for today's program. After participating in this activity, learners should be able to incorporate best practices for diagnosis, staging, and monitoring disease using non-invasive tests and biomarkers. So to begin, we'll circle back to the case that we've been following across these snack series. And again, this is the second in four parts of this series. So we've been following Mr. B. Dr. Danani, would you briefly recap kind of where we've been with our case so far?
Yeah, sure. So this is Mr. B. Mr. B is a 61-year-old utilities field crew chief. And, he presented with routine follow-up. As we know, really had no symptoms, really no liver-specific symptoms. Important details about his history. He has diabetes, dyslipidemia, and hypertension. He is overweight with a BMI of 29.1. He drinks occasional glass of wine with dinner, and his current medications are metformin, valsartan, and hydrochlorothiazide. His physical exam was essentially normal. Here we have the labs, just so you recall from the previous series. His AST is 28, ALT of 36. So, essentially almost normal 30, and lower is considered normal. An OCVAS of 100, bilirubin of 1, an albumin of 4, and platelets of 110,000. And then you have some labs here from his lipid panel with an LDL of 130, an HDL of 36, triglycerides, and you have of 235, and hemoglobin A1C of 7.1%. So the things that I'm seeing here, this is a person who is very metabolically enriched with type 2 diabetes, dyslipidemia, hypertension. Liver tests are normal. One thing I do see that the platelets are a little bit low, so less than 150,000 would be considered low. Has dyslipidemia, is not on a statin, and the hemoglobin A1C is 7.1%. So pretty good, but not ideal. So, going back to the last series, we had posed to our audience, what would you do in, Mr. B in terms of next steps? And, appropriately, we picked FIB-4. And the FIB-4 for Mr. B was 2.59. So just remember that's kind of in the intermediate category. So, sits between 1.3 and 2.67. So again, just to recap, FIB-4 is a blood-based test that can be calculated using the age of the patient, an ALT, an AST, and platelet count of the patient. Scores of 1.3 and lower rule out advanced fibrosis, and scores of 2.67 and higher are predictive of advanced fibrosis. Again, this is a score that can be calculated through routine blood tests. And at this point, many healthcare systems have this incorporated into their electronic medical record. And again, a good test to predict advanced fibrosis. For Mr. B, we also had an ultrasound, and this ultrasound demonstrated hepatic steatosis without any focal hepatic lesions, no bile duct changes, or evidence of portal hypertension. So again, thinking about, hepatic steatosis being a very common presentation of this disease as well.
So just a few points that we wanted to highlight before we move on in this case. So the first thing that we had really emphasized was for Mr. B, his liver enzymes, or otherwise referred to as liver function tests, were normal. And often one might instinctively think that if the liver enzymes are normal, perhaps the liver is in good shape. You don't have to be worried about chronic liver disease, specifically fibrosis. What we know, though, is particularly as people advance in their degree of scarring or fibrosis, the liver enzymes can actually normalize and be on the lower end. Often we'll refer to that as kind of burnt out liver disease. So having normal liver enzymes do not specifically mean that you don't have to be worried about significant liver disease, and if anything, potentially could indicate that maybe somebody has more advanced disease. The other thing that we highlighted was the platelet count. So, as Dr. Janani mentioned, in Mr. B's case, the platelet count was below the upper limit of normal. And platelets are used to calculate the FIB-4, so that can weigh very heavily into which of the three categories somebody is put into: low risk, indeterminate, or high risk. And in this case, Mr. B was in the indeterminate zone. And then lastly, FIB-4 is calculated using very routinely obtained blood work. So very often patients will be getting a CBC and a CMP as part of their routine care. So for a lot of patients, it doesn't add any extra cost to do this. So in many aspects, could be interpreted as being a cost-free test that you can use to risk stratify patients. Dr. Denani, anything else to add?
No, I think those are all great points. I think the, one thing we want to take away from this is that don't use your liver tests, your liver enzymes as an indicator of whether or not somebody has disease. Really think about this as looking for patients who are at risk for developing MASLD and MASLD fibrosis, and risk stratifying those individuals versus just using the liver enzymes to guide, guide your next steps.
Perfect. Okay, so moving to our first audience response question for this series. So, given the information that we have, what would you do next to determine how to better risk stratify Mr. B in terms of having significant scarring related to his hepatic steatosis? The options include A, a liver biopsy; B, a magnetic resonance elastography or MRE; C, doing a transient elastography, specifically a FibroScan; D, obtaining an enhanced liver fibrosis or ELF score; or E, I don't know. So, of course, there may be more than one answer depending on what's available in your practice at your institution. But oftentimes, an ELF score is a good follow-up non-invasive test after a FIB-4 in the indeterminate zone. But as we'll highlight on the next slide, there are definitely multiple different options if you initially get a FIB-4 that's in the indeterminate zone and you need to do a second test to better get an assessment of how much fibrosis an individual may have. And this next slide just highlights the current AASLD guidelines in terms of screening and risk stratification in MASLD. And again, what we want to highlight here is, the initial steps really occurs in primary care or other relevant non-GI hepatology care. So if you have a patient that has risk factors for having MASLD, you start with your primary risk assessment, which is the FIB-4. And as we said, it puts you into one of three categories: low risk, indeterminate or intermediate or high, with the number to really kind of focus on is 1.3. So if it's greater than or equal to 1.3, then you have to say, okay, is it putting you in the indeterminate zone or the high risk zone? And the high risk is greater than 2.67. So for our patient, he's in the indeterminate. And so what's highlighted in the AASLD algorithm for next steps could either be your FibroScan, or here abbreviated as VCTE, which is vibration-controlled transient elastography. Depending on whether or not you have access to that in your practice, if you don't, then very often the alternative is a send-out test, a blood-based test called ELF that we mentioned. And that though both of those could be good options for secondary risk assessment to better categorize how much scarring the patient may have and whether or not they need to be referred on to a hepatologist. So just to review a little bit more about the ELF test, because depending on your practice, you may or may not have ever used this or have even heard about it. Again, this stands for the Enhanced Liver Fibrosis Test. And that is abbreviated as an ELF score. So this is a proprietary blood test, and it delivers information using an algorithm assessing three common serum biomarkers. So these are all kind of collagen biomarkers that can indicate potential liver fibrosis. Those biomarkers are highlighted here. It's not important to remember what they're made out of, but essentially it's one blood test that you send out. And again, similar to the FIB-4 score, it'll put you into one of three buckets: low risk, indeterminate, or high risk. And these are the cut points that we follow. So low risk is 7.7 or lower, intermediate or indeterminate is 9.8, and then anything 11.3 or higher is high risk. And so if your ELF score is sent out and comes back at 9.8 or higher, that is a red flag, making that it's concerning that somebody potentially has advanced fibrosis. Moving on, Dr. Denani, can you tell us a little bit about elastography-based methods to estimate liver stiffness?
We have a lot of elastography-based methodology, so they're to assess for liver fibrosis, and we can do this through ultrasound-based. We can do this through MRI-based as well. So, essentially, the one that's really most heard of, most available, and most commonly used is vibration-controlled transient elastography, or more commonly known as FibroScan. And this is a test that basically uses vibration waves that are propagated across the liver, and the speed of that wave correlates with the degree of liver stiffness. So the higher the score, the higher the level of stiffness. And this is a pretty accurate, point of care testing, you could say, to assess patients, especially with stage 3, stage 4 fibrosis, which is advanced fibrosis. The neat feature about the VCT is that there's an additional feature on it, which allows you to measure the degree of hepatic steatosis. It'll also help you identify whether or not patient has steatosis and the degree of steatosis as well. Here we're also like highlighting other forms of elastography-based tests, so very similar principles, but a shear wave or an ARFI basically measures liver stiffness in a single region of interest. And then there's MRI-based technology, which is referred to as MR elastography, and this measures liver stiffness kind of across different regions across the liver. The MRE is probably the most accurate, imaging-based elastography biomarker that we have that correlates well with liver biopsy. So, but again, keeping in mind that, this is a limited resource, can also be an expensive resource, and so, only available in certain situations and usually at, big healthcare centers. These are results, and this is one of multiple studies that has looked at the correlation of liver stiffness measurements and how they perform across the spectrum of the different stages of liver fibrosis. So here, what we're showing you is results from a cross-sectional study that included 452 patients who had, a multitude of NITs performed, and one of them was FibroScan or VCTE. And these patients also had correlating liver biopsy, so histological data as well. And out of all the NITs that were investigated, FibroScan, in addition to another one, performed well when it to demonstrate a correlation with liver histology for F3 and F4 fibrosis. So again, for advanced fibrosis, with AROC numbers of 0.83 for F3 and 0.81 for F4. So again, this is one of multiple studies that shows and demonstrates the accuracy of using elastography-based measurements to correlate well with liver biopsy results. This slide basically highlights that there are a lot of other testing that's available out there. So there's a lot of serum-based testing, there's a lot of proprietary-based testing, and then there's a lot of algorithmic-based testing, which uses lab components such as liver enzymes and puts them in an algorithm in combination with liver stiffness measurements from some of our elastography-based modalities. I think the key here really is that we have lots of tests that are being investigated. A lot of these NITs or NILDA are being used right now in clinical trials. The point of this really is that once you've identified a patient who is at risk for significant fibrosis and advanced fibrosis as a result of MASLD, do something. So start off with a FIB-4 and then use what tools you have available in your practices, in your health centers, and do the next test if someone is coming up in that indeterminate zone. So I think the key here is do a FIB-4 and then further risk stratify the patients based on the tests that you have available in your healthcare system.
Okay, so circling back to our patient case. So in Mr. B's case, he did undergo a FibroScan and his liver stiffness measurement came back as 9. However, there was a very high interquartile range. So when you order a FibroScan, you'll get a liver stiffness measurement that's a summary of all of the different measurements you get from that test because you have to do multiple measurements. And with associated that, you'll get an interquartile range. And generally speaking, anything above 30 is considered high, meaning that the different measurements were widely variable. So the higher your interquartile range, the less confident you are that the summary number is an accurate assessment of stiffness for that patient. But in Mr. B's case, it was 9, but had a high IQR. So he specifically needed to be scanned over 20 times to get his summary estimate. So in this case, a 9, if you circle back to that ASLD algorithm, puts him in the range suggesting more kind of F2 area. However, depending on your patient and other factors, that will impact how accurate you think that test may be. So, Dr. Janani, because of that, Mr. B also had an MRE ordered. He was kind of lucky enough to be at a center that had access to MRE. And when they did the MRE, his liver stiffness measurement there was 4.2 with a PDFF of 15%. So what are your thoughts about kind of these results of the FibroScan and then the MRE?
So I think that's a really, really important point, that Dr. Tinkopa highlighted. Don't just look at your liver stiffness measurement. Look to see how accurate that reading is. So look at your interquartile range. Look to see what the variability is and look to see what the success rate of those re readings were. In someone like Mr. B, I think the trigger here really to do another test really is that he continued to have these platelets of 110,000, right? So when we think about low platelets, we think about is this early signs of someone having cirrhosis and portal hypertension. So, and hence, Mr. B went on to have this MR elastography. So when we look at the MR elastography, he had a liver stiffness measurement of 4.2 kilopascals, and we're able to also measure and quantify the degree of fat in the liver. So his PDFF, which is 15%, so it quantifies the amount of triglycerides in the liver. So, one thing to really note here is that your kPa, which is your measure that you're using for FibroScan, is different from what you're using for MRE. So the numbers on different modalities don't correlate to the same degree of liver stiffness. So always keep that in mind. And similarly, while you're able to get some fat scores on a FibroScan, those are quantified a little bit different on an PDFF. With a 4.2, I would say he has F3 fibrosis. But again, this is someone who sits in that F2, F3 range, and this is someone that you would worry about because we do know that once you get to F2 fibrosis as a result of MASLD, we are at a heightened risk for cardiovascular mortality, overall mortality, and also an uptick in liver-related mortality. Dr. Tim Kopa, so a lot of questions that I often get are like, great, it's nice that there's a test called ELF. How do I order it? Where do I get it? Can you comment on that a little bit?
Sure. Again, depending on your specific institution and where you practice, how easy it is to order is variable. So some practices, because they don't have access to things like FibroScan or MRE, they do a lot of ELF, and they partner with different laboratories. So sometimes you partner with Quest, other times with LabCorp. But you have to kind of identify which lab is able to process this, and it's essentially a send out. So if you are working somewhere where you don't have access to FibroScan or MRE, kind of partnering with your lab to figure out which of those two kind of major outside laboratories can process the request would be your best bet. In my clinical practice, because we have kind of very easy access to both VCTE and MRE, I personally don't order a lot of ELF, but a lot of practitioners out in the community do often use ELF as kind of their second test. I guess what would be your practice, Dr. Janani?
Yeah, so we have multiple sites throughout our healthcare system, and while we have availability to FibroScan and MRE, they're only available in certain sites. And so what we did was we started incorporating ELF into our certain practices that didn't have point of care testing with FibroScan in those clinics. And what we were able to do is we were able to bring it in-house, so we have a pretty quick turnaround for our ELF scores, and we think that's really helped our practice because they are oftentimes when you're unable to get a FibroScan because somebody ate just before their appointment or you had inaccurate readings, so you also have this other option to be able to order an ELF on that patient. Yeah, so we have access to all of it. It just kind of depends on who's seeing a patient in which location.
Perfect. So, kind of circling back to the AASLD algorithm, because again, in this patient, he had normal liver enzymes, but low platelets. His FIB4 was indeterminate. He had a FibroScan or VCTE with the stiffness measurement, not super concerning, but not normal. And then the MRE had a higher stiffness measurement that was concerning for more advanced fibrosis. So, if you go back to the algorithm, the other option, as we discussed, was you could potentially send the ELF test, but also, in cases where there's some ambiguity, some tests are saying low risk, other parts of his clinical picture concerning, particularly for this patient, the low platelets. In some cases, we do end up doing a liver biopsy to kind of more definitively stage it. So each case is individualized where you have non-invasive tests that are giving you consistent kind of categorization, like two tests would both say they're low risk, or two tests both say they're high risk. We usually wouldn't do something like a biopsy. But Dr. Dadani, in your kind of practice, what are your thoughts about when you have tests with different kind of categorizations? Where are your thoughts about sending someone for biopsy?
Yeah, no, I think that's a great question. And I think it happens very often in clinical practice, right? So I always say don't look at just the numbers, like look at your patient, right? Are there hints, early hints on laboratory, on your lab, laboratory tests that are suggesting that this person may have a little bit more advanced disease? So, I agree. If there's a discordance between your NITs where they're very drastically off, like, F1 and F3, I think in those patients, a liver biopsy is appropriate, because it'll give you a histological assessment. But again, there is some limitations to liver biopsy as well, right? So it's only a very specific sampling of the entire liver. This is a heterogeneous disease, so you also want to make sure that you have an adequate sample. But the other thing here would be to think about would be if you are thinking of another liver-related disease that is not MASLD, right? So as a as you worked up the patient and you were suspicious of something else going on, another chronic liver disease, a liver biopsy, for instance, would be appropriate. I think the neat thing about now having multiple NITs or available to us, and also multiple different algorithmic scoring systems that now incorporates liver stiffness measurements and liver enzymes, for instance, is that you can do sequential testing to really improve your pretest probability. Does this person have significant fibrosis or not? So, start using, I would say start using these more, start with a FIB4, see what you have available to you, and then, step back and kind of look at the patient because, one algorithm doesn't fit every patient profile.
And then the other question that comes up a lot is, say you do this risk stratification and they're low risk, but they have ongoing metabolic risk factors, say diabetes, having an elevated BMI. How do you use non-invasive tests to monitor kind of disease progression over time? How should we be thinking about that?
Yeah, no, that's great. So, as a hepatologist, I want to see I think patients that are have significant fibrosis benefit from seeing me in my liver clinic because I can offer them liver directed and with a combination of metabolic based targeted therapies. When I have a patient who I have done multitude of NITs on, and they are consistently, for instance, a FIB-4 of less than 1.3, a FibroScan of less than 8 kPa, or an ELF of less than 7.7. Those are patients that you are pretty confident do not have advanced liver disease, right? But what do you tell their primary care? What do you tell their primary care physician? What do you tell their diabetologist? So, in patients who have any indication of insulin resistance, so patients are pre-diabetic or diabetic, I would recommend PCPs and endocrinologists doing a FIB-4 annually. And then, in those patients who don't have these insulin resistance risk factors, they could do a FIB-4 every 2 to 3 years. But I think the key is the more often you see these patients, the more you're thinking about MASLD, the more risk stratification that you are doing, you will eventually capture that patient when they, then pivot into significant fibrosis, which allows us to then intervene early.
Okay, great. Well, that's about all the time we have today. So I'd like to thank Dr. Denani for your astute clinical perspectives and practical advice. And thank you to our audience for participating. Before we close, I'd like to offer three SMART goals, which are specific, measurable, attainable, relevant, and timely action items that you can apply to the care of your patients in your own practice. So, again, given the objectives for today's session, over the next 3 months, we hope that you can increase the percentage of patients you screen for MASLD and MASH who have type 2 diabetes or other relevant metabolic risk factors. We also hope that you can now use non-invasive tests to risk stratify patients with potential MASLD and MASH, and also use these non-invasive tests to monitor patients for progression to MASH or to accumulation of more significant fibrosis. To receive credit for today's activity, please complete the evaluation and post-test. And as a segue, Dr. Denani beautifully outlined kind of from here where to go. Thankfully, now we do have two different FDA-approved treatments for MASH. And so that will be the focus of the next segment in this series. Thank you very much.
Thank you.